Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Parenting writer KJ Dell'Antonia always hoped to have a big family, and she got one, two boys and two girls. But more than a decade into raising them, she began to ask herself, why isn't this more fun? Far from the warm, family bonding experience she'd imagined, her days were a grumpy haze of work, shuttling kids around, breaking up fights, dealing with childhood illnesses, school crises, and just plain old brattiness. But instead of resigning herself to this joyless slog, Dell'Antonia put her research and writing skills to work to change it. The result is her new book called How to Be a Happier Parent: Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute. KJ Dell'Antonia is with us today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And KJ, it's really fun to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been a parenting writer for some time and of some note. And so for years, you've received questions from parents about all kinds of topics. But you say the one that struck you the most is this one. Why isn't this any fun? How did people express that to you, KJ? What did you hear from people?
Well, as the lead writer and editor of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, not only was I writing myself, so on interviewing, talking to experts really out there, I was also editing. So I would get essays, not just the ones that you actually saw if you were a reader of the Motherload, but easily for every episode or every essay that we published, you know, 50 plus probably that we didn't. And the tone was sort of really, it was this sense of being really fraught. And there was this overwhelming, idea that this is really hard. And, you know, it takes wine in your sippy cup to get through it. And we're all really in the trenches. And all the, you know, the metaphors we used and everything, they were all kind of like negative. Like, this is work. This is really, and it is hard. It's not like, you know, having kids is not like not having kids. But I don't think any of us went into it with this idea of, I know, I'd like to spend the next 15 years driving people places and making doctor's appointments. We had a little something more in mind.
So a lot of the stories you heard from people were just like, it's like digging ditches, you know, and just daily grind, sort of a joyless slog.
And the research shows that too. Like, we answer research surveys in way, you know, we tell people we'd rather do laundry than spend time with our kids. We end up with these headlines that are like, how having children robs parents of all joy. And that's a real headline. We're seeing it as a chore.
So you have your own story in here, too, about how, you know, about 12 years into raising these four kids, and you say, you know, despite the blessings of four healthy children and a reasonable income, you found yourself complaining a lot, grumpy a lot. You and your husband, you know, would get into bed at night and sort of, you know, trade stories about who had the worst day with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. We still kind of do that.
You know, so why bother having a family? I mean, so what was going on in your own life?
I had a full-time job. My husband had a full-time job. We had these four kids, and we've signed them up for everything. And it will tell you a classically New Hampshire thing about my oldest child, who is now 17, that when he was, in about second grade, he played hockey, and he did downhill ski racing, and he did Nordic ski racing. And then my second child played hockey, and she tried the race, you know. And then the third and the fourth child, they love to snowboard, which is what they ended up doing because we live here and you got to do stuff. They can Nordic ski, but gosh knows we weren't in any organized program. I mean, you know, we did all the things with the first one, and then we tried to do all the things with the second one, and then you're sort of hauling the third and the fourth one around, and it got to be too much.
What did it feel like? Describe the sort of daily slog that you found yourself in.
Well, we call
it, in addition to work, by the way.
In addition to work, which was, you know, it's a full-time job. It was a lovely, flexible job. And my husband has a pretty flexible job. So we had it good, right? But every day we would just sort of get up and lace up our skates and start running. And we didn't feel like we stopped until 9 or 10 o'clock at night, at which point we really, you know, we need some time to ourselves. And then it would be 1 in the morning before we went to sleep.
Oh,
and everybody
gosh.
Was just, you know, we were sort of all dragging.
So what's it been like for you now, KJ, to write this book, to get asked to speak on the radio and, you know, out at schools and so forth? I mean, people kind of looking at this title, How to Be a Happier Parent, and they're saying, wow, KJ, give me the magic key to this. But the book doesn't really have a key, does it? It just says, figure out what works for you.
Yeah, it's not a magic key. It's not how to be happy either. It's how to be happier. So, you know, I've heard myself touted as a parenting expert, which makes me want to crawl under tables. And certainly my children would laugh hysterically, because what I am is a journalist who had a problem and a way to get at that problem and a way to research it and to talk to a lot of people and come up with ideas. So what the book in some ways just boils down to is, what's if you're unhappy in some area of your parenting, and I have definitely found that most of us are, which area is it, and what is making you unhappy, or which areas are there and what is making them you unhappy? And then it's this sort of question of, well, is there something that you can do differently, or is there a way to think about it differently? And one or the other of those is probably going to help, because a lot of, you know, we don't get everything right, and we don't always let our brains do the, you know, our brains can really mess with our happiness sometimes. So it's not, you know, I can't really get up and say, here is the answer to your morning crisis. But I can say, here is some stuff you could do to make this better. And it's made things better for me.
Well, and we're going to get into that mindset, because really beyond the sort of, you know, you can do this for mornings, you can do this about chores, that's not really what it's about. It's about a different mindset. I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. KJ, the number for you to be part of our conversation, we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the Exchange, KJ Dell'Antonia is here with her brand new book, How to Be a Happier Parent. In it, she offers lots of research and her own experiences raising four kids to examine the question many parents these days are asking, why isn't this a little bit more fun? We'd love to hear from you. What makes you absolutely off the wall as a parent? What solutions have you found in your household to break out of common conflicts like chores or homework or sibling fights? Again, you can join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, KJ, you write that happier parenting is largely about your mindset, also the mechanics and the rules and so forth that you establish in your home. But really, you say the mindset is where it all begins. So what's this magic mindset that will turn stressed out parents into cheerful ones?
It's totally magic. So everybody listen really closely now. Okay, quick, somebody find static. No, it's you know, a big part of this battle of being happier in your family and happier at home is wanting to be happier and deciding to make the changes or to think about things differently that will make you happier. And it's a funny, funny thing, because it sounds really obvious. Like, well, of course everyone wants to be happier in the pursuit of happiness. And this is, in fact, maybe we're too concerned about happiness. And there we go. We are sliding off down the slippery slope of, well, maybe happiness is bad. I talked to one researcher, Rick Hansen. He's written a book called Hardwiring Happiness, and it's all about how our brains are geared to look for bad stuff. And so it's about the different mindset. But what really struck me about our conversation and what one of the things that has stuck with me is that he said, sometimes when I talk to Americans, I feel like they're afraid to be happy.
Really?
Yeah. Like, we don't think it's okay. We don't think we have, and I think this is goes doubly so for parents. We don't think we have a right to be worried about our own happiness when we're supposed to be, like, you know, putting all of our time and resources into these children and, you know, making them better and raising them up in this scary economy in this world where we don't know what jobs are even going to exist in 20 years. And, you know, so we feel like we need to stress about that, or we need to get upset because, you know, the world is not perfect for everyone, which it's not, and it is never going to be. Or we just don't, you know, for whatever reason to do with our upbringing or our need to work or our Puritan ethics or something, we just don't feel like happiness is a worthy thing to seek.
That's really interesting.
It's crazy. And I, when I heard him say that, I was just like, I don't want to be afraid to be happy. That's terrible. I don't
sure.
want my brain to work on making me less happy.
Well, and either. You know, as a friend of mine used to say, you could be hit by a bread truck tomorrow.
You
so,
could.
You know, you might as well be happy today. So the mindset, first of all, is just to decide that you want to be happier.
Right, that you want this and that you're gonna try. You know, you're gonna do the things that might make things better for you, even sometimes they might inconvenience your children. Sometimes it's just a question of just thinking about things differently.
So it's hard to flip the switch though.
It is.
So how did you KJ, get started with that?
It's hard to pinpoint an exact start, but
yeah, was there like an aha moment?
There's a funny moment that I do keep going back to. My oldest child is about 11, and it's November, and it's the start of hockey season, which means that everything on the, because although we've let go of all the skiing and everything like that, all of my children play hockey, and that's one activity per child, but it's four children.
Right.
And so, you know, it's
and
a lot.
And hockey is very engaging.
Yeah. And especially at that point, nobody's driving, things are different. So he's 11, and so the season is ramping up. So everything is stressful. And I think my job at the Times is fairly new. And also, this is a great time because my best friend is coming to visit. And she's bringing her husband and her three kids who are the exact same ages as mine. And we're thrilled and we're delighted. And they're going to come for 2 days. And we planned it and everything. And so now they're here. But the complication is that they stopped in Boston for a day. And one of the kids felt a little ill. So they went to the urgent care. And she had the measles. And it turns out that if you get the measles or chicken pox? It was chicken pox, sorry. And no, it wasn't chicken pox. Anyway, so it was the measles.
Something scary and contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, something that many of us vaccinate for, and that's a different conversation. But Massachusetts won't let you give it back on a plane at that point for a week. Plus, they're going to vaccinate your remaining children if this happens. And so now, it's great because my kids have all been had their vaccinations so they can come stay with us, but they're going to be there for a week. And I have not planned for this, and we don't have an extra car, and everything is crazy. Plus, they're vegan, and I have not planned to feed vegans, you know, and it's great, be vegan, but it was just, you know, I'm stressing, right? So my shoulders are in my ears, and I'm driving and having this sort of, oh my God, moment, and the phone rings. And we all know that no conversation, you know, no story that involves the words "the phone rings" is a great story. So this is not horrible, but my son's had an accident at the hockey rink, and they're on their way to the hospital, and they don't know, you know. And it turns out he's broken his leg. It's not the end of the world. He's got a broken leg, but you know, it's just like happened in the story, like all the air goes out of the room when the phone rings and somebody tells you they're on the emergency room. And at that moment, all I wanted was like 10 minutes ago back again, right? All I wanted was the problem of having to feed my best friend and her children, who I was actually delighted to have for another 5 days. All I wanted was the problem of scheduling all the hockey that one of my kids now isn't going to be able to play for 6 or 8 weeks or whatever. All I wanted was to go back to
what seemed now to be a simpler time.
That was was the good times, right? So we've all had that experience. And the point is to maintain it, to keep it in your head, to keep realizing that, you know, that moment when you've got a kid on the floor crying because long division is just too hard and dinner's boiling over on the stove and you're stressed about work and everything, that's actually, those are good problems. This is happy times. This is what we wanted in life. And when you can shift your mind around to realize that those problems you get when you're safe and secure and everything's actually pretty good are a reason to be happy, not a reason to, you know, be losing your mind with angst and stress, it really makes a difference in just how you approach your everyday life. So that was, it's not like, you know, I did that and that was it and it was all.
Sure, it's process and we'll definitely talk about that. But that was where you kind of said, okay.
It was one of those moments, yeah.
You know, I need to view this differently.
Yeah.
I want to remind our listeners again that you can join us 1-800-892-6477. How do you approach this idea of being a happier parent? And have you asked yourself at some point in time, why isn't this more fun? Join us. We'd really love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. So digging into the mindset a little bit more, KJ, because there's some specifics here that I found really helpful. One of those is kind of chucking the idea, that old saying, you're only as happy as your most unhappy child. You say, you can be perfectly happy when your kids aren't.
Yeah, you can be.
Don't let them bring you down.
No, you can be and you should be. So I want to start with you can be. Because we are adults and we have an adult perspective that our kids don't get, right? So when we see them stressing out because they have lost their favorite toy or their balloon has floated away or they're not in the second grade class that their best friend is in, or, you know, they've failed the Spanish test, they've lost the girlfriend, they've been left out of the party, they didn't get into the college. You see how these are getting?
Yes, yeah, ramping up.
They do. But what we know is there's another balloon, another test, another girlfriend, another college. There really is. We can look back and see that for us and for so many of the people we know, things that seemed like massive roadblocks turned out to be great. And we also know or should know, it's hard to remember that you really don't want to raise a child who has never so much as lost a balloon. They need to have those setbacks. So it's important for us to just sort of maintain our own emotional equilibrium around this. It's everything is fine. And on top of that, we actually should. It's better for our kids. Your kids, despite all appearances, they actually don't want to make us unhappy. So when something happens to them and it seems to them to careen us down into the depths of despair as well.
Then they think, ooh, this must be really bad.
That's part of it.
Gotcha.
And they also think, maybe next time I just won't say anything.
Oh, and then they're not sharing
maybe
with you.
Next time
you
want
them to share their disappointments.
Maybe next time I won't try out for that team.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. So related to this, KJ, this you pushing back on you're only as happy as your most unhappy child, you're saying, you know, just sort of play it even. You also say you don't have to go there. And I love that. So what does that mean?
This is a personal favorite of mine at the moment. One of my kids in particular is riding a real emotional roller coaster right now. And we can go from, you know, oh, thank you, you're the best, thank you for helping me buy this dress, to I hate you, you're stupid, you've ruined my entire life in, you know, the space of a blink of an eye. And you don't have to go in there is a phrase that my husband and I made up because we used to have a different child who would have these massive temper tantrums and would go in a closet to do it. And we would sort of stand there and go, are you going in there? I'm not going in there. And we realized emotionally, we didn't have to go in there. Like we could sympathize. We could empathize. It's the same sort of as being happy when your kids aren't. It's not like you don't get their emotion. It's not like that you're not you know, sort of responding in an appropriate and empathetic way, but you don't have to suck it in. And especially when you've got a kid screaming, I hate you, you don't have to respond with, you don't talk to me like that, or I can't believe you said that. You're hurting my feelings. Like, you don't have to rise to
their... I've done both of those things.
So have I. You don't have to rise to their emotional level.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't, they don't have anything to push back against. So they're sort of just falling over because there's nothing to bounce off of. And you can just kind of go on, you know, as my kid storms upstairs and slams the door and leaving me in the kitchen. And I can just go, if I haven't like entered into her emotional well, I can just go on. I'm fine. And I tell you, it feels really great when you can pull it off.
Yeah, when you can pull it off.
It's not necessarily easy.
Yeah. When is it harder to pull off? I mean, sometimes, you know, you can see like, you know, the balloon flying off into the sky, obviously. You know, there's another balloon and so forth. But sometimes it is harder.
But when you get a kid who has a big disappointment or, you know, who fails a test that they could have studied, and maybe you said, you should study a little more instead of playing Fortnite. You know, it's hard. But I feel like once you've practiced it some and realized how great it feels to keep your own little distance, to be a little separate, then it gets easier. It's something that gets easier with practice.
The other one that there's a lot of these that are very helpful to sort of flip that mindset switch, KJ. Another one you have is people and especially children change. And that's hard to remember when your kid has done something unkind or even truly awful. You know, you can easily spin out the future scenarios, you know, because he did this, he's going to do this and he's going to do this and he'll never get a job and he'll end up in jail. And, you know, it's easy to go there.
Yeah. No, it's easier to go there than it is not to go there.
Right.
Really, our brains are designed to see all the worst possible, possible outcomes of any given thing, because that's in theory how we're supposed to be able to avoid them, which works great if you're trying to go around a tiger that's behind a bush, but not so great, you know, if you're just having a panic because your child is not going to make the fifth grade advanced math class, which means they won't be in algebra at the right time and they won't get to take calculus in high school and they won't, you know, so it's harder when the thing is not a real tiger. I'm sorry, I lost track of the question.
Well, it's just the idea that, and it's super interesting, it's sort of brain science. It's that we've evolved to awfulize, to go to the worst possible scenario. But now in our society, you know, there's all these like scary warnings, kind of like what you said. If you don't get into this math class, you won't get into algebra. And then blah, 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 you know, and then Harvard's out of the question. And, you know, we could talk for an hour about who cares? I mean, you know, there's a lot of other options.
Yeah, but realistically, we care. And if we don't care specifically about that thing, we care. You know, it's just this weird dichotomy of wanting your kid to be happy all the time and yet knowing that being happy all the time is not the right thing for them. So you've got that piece of it. And then you've got this, you know, training your brain to not react in a huge way when things seem scary, because they're probably, most of the things we view as threats for our kids aren't really actual threats.
Well, and instinctively, every parent listening would agree. They would say, well, of course I know my kid's not supposed to be happy all the time. But at the moment, just this once. All right, we will talk a lot more after a short break. I'm going to ask you, KJ, about you do you. That's another mantra. And then we'll get into some of the biggies that I know parents ask you about all the time. Screens, chores, homework, and sibling fights. We'll talk about all that coming up. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're sitting down with author KJ Dell'Antonia about her new book, How to Be a Happier Parent. And in it, she presents tons of research, as well as her own experiences raising four kids, focused on the questions she says she gets all the time from parents. Why isn't this more fun? And as we've been hearing from KJ, she says a lot of it is about the mindset. Let's hear from you. What absolutely makes you crazy as a parent from your kids? What solutions have you found that work in your own household to break out of common conflicts like homework, sibling fights, screen time? Join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. So, KJ, before we go to our listeners, one more mindset mantra, if I could call it that,
about parental happiness is you do you. What are you trying to say there?
You know, other people do such cool things when as parents. They, you know, they take their kids and they live abroad for a year, or they climb every, you know, all the major peaks in New Hampshire, or, you know, they go to Canada and they cross-country ski that all the way across the one of the, I don't even know what it is. They do such cool things that I do not do.
And it's hard not to compare, isn't it?
It really is. And what we need to remember is that every one of us does something that's cool. You are doing you. Like, there's something that you guys are doing as a family, and whether it's that you love to bake and you bake regularly, or you make a huge thing out of Halloween. I heard a great one the other day, a parent of kids who are actually adults now. You know, what did her kids look back on and sort of see as the big thing in their family? And they were like, oh, we had these great conversations around the dinner table. Now, how simple is that? You can't put that on Pinterest. You know, you're not Instagramming that. But her kids and their friends remember that they had these in-depth, detailed dinner table conversations. So that is her doing her. And I'm sure that she felt like, you know, well, but if we were really cool, I'd be playing the guitar and, you know, we'd all be singing around the... That actually happened to me. We were at a party recently, and it was Carol Dunn. She's the head of the Northern Stage in the Upper Valley in New Hampshire. And she got out a guitar and her daughter got out a guitar and they played a song and we all sung her. This has never happened to me before in my whole life. And it was so wonderful. And I turned to my son and I said, I wish we could do that with the guitar. And he said, me too. And I said, except I only just wish we could do it. I don't actually wish we had to learn how to do it. And he was like, yeah. So you can't do everything. You're not supposed to do everything, but you are doing something that is you, that is like the thing for you.
Well, I really appreciate that, because a couple weeks ago, you know, beautiful weather, you know, end of summer, early fall day, and I ran into a friend and her daughter, and they were like, oh, we just knocked off 3 more 4,000 footers.
See?
And this is something we're doing together. And I was like,
I am not doing that.
I'm not doing that. But I think maybe I'm doing other stuff.
Totally,
I don't know. Maybe I'll learn when they're 30.
Well, that's the thing. It's really hard to see our own things. But everybody has got them. And that's why I love that conversation example, because that's who would see that? Like, you're not going to be like, and tonight we had another of our great conversations. Here's the bento bags I made. I mean, you know.
Yeah, right. And you can't put great family conversations on Instagram. I wonder what you think about social media kind of increasing this competitiveness for look at my awesome family.
Well, you know, it's funny because I hear that a lot, but it isn't my, it's not really my experience on social media. The people and, you know, I obviously am pretty followed and follow a lot of people. I see a lot of honesty. I think some of the problem is that we don't even look at the honesty. We only look at the pretty pictures. So I frequently see people sort of, you know, posting that their kids had a screaming fight on Instagram and stuff like that. I don't think it's as bad. I think, again, it's a question of what our mind is focusing on. And we do tend to focus on, wait, if they're climbing the 4,000 peaks, you know, 4,000 footers, maybe I should be climbing
the
4,000.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's how I felt.
Yeah, that's just, it's a natural, helpful, thanks, brains. There you go.
Yeah, right.
It's another way we're designed
making ourselves
to mess ourselves
unhappy.
Up.
And part of this, you do you. So part of it is what you just said, KJ, you know, don't compare yourself so much to other families. Look at what your family is doing that makes you kind of cool. But the other thing that I took out of that is parents who feel like they're selfish if they do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to go to the gym. I would love to get together with a friend. I would love to read a book, but I have to drive Johnny and Susie to, you know, 6 places. So that to me feels like you do you as well.
That
kind of saying
another,
to them, you know, you can set aside some time for yourself.
Yeah, that is another great meaning of that. And one of the things I didn't put it on my list of mantras, but another thing that I frequently say is don't put your kids first all the time. You know, if they're not bleeding, your needs, you're the grown up. You're the one who can make money. You're the one who can make dinner. You got a lot of important roles in this family. And if we look back on our childhoods, most of us that are parents now, you don't see your parents prioritizing your every activity and your every move and your homework. Absolutely not, right? So there's just so much that goes into this, but we really need to recognize our role as the adults in the family, and the kids shouldn't see themselves as the center. You know, it should definitely be, I'm sorry, I can't drive you over to your friends right now. I've got a tennis game or whatever it is that you have. They should know that grown-ups take precedence.
Or, I'm sorry you don't really love the childcare room at the gym, but
yeah,
I need to go.
Yeah.
So
off
you can
we
just
go.
Sit there for an hour.
And that, I mean, that is hard because it feels optional. You know, it feels like something you could give up so they could be happier. But there's no reason to. If it makes you happy, they can think of all the things that you do that maybe were not really on the top of your list. There should be more things that they do that aren't on the top of their list than that you do.
All right. To our listeners, KJ, this is great. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call, 1-800-892-NHPR. We're looking at this question that KJ Dell'Antonia researches in her new book. It's called How to Be a Happier Parent, Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute. Let's go to our listeners, KJ, and Lori's calling in from Portsmouth. Hi, Lori. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Great topic. I wanted to add a comment about something that was very successful in my family. I raised three kids without TV, and we cut the cord a long time ago. We had a TV screen, but there was no connection to cable or outside TV channels. And in order for the kids to earn screen time, like watching a movie or even having time on the laptop, they needed to earn that time. And so I did a poker chip system, red, white, and blue poker chips. Each color had a different denomination of time, 15, 20, and 30 minutes. And they could earn those poker chips by doing simple things like chores, homework, practicing the violin, helping their brother reading. And then they could save their chips and cash it in for some screen time. It cut down on the amount of fighting and arguing for when the TV had to be turned off, for when it was dinner time, but the show wasn't over. And they really shifted more from focusing on screen time to reading and doing a lot of other activities. It was a great strategy in my house, and I recommend it to a lot of other parents.
Well, Lori, it's great to hear from you. And KJ, in the other half of the book, you really talk about, you know, day-to-day things that drive a lot of parents crazy. And number one is screen time. So, Lori, I'm glad you called.
Yes, and this, I love this because this is a great example of something that works for you, that made you happier, that worked in your family, that honestly, that would make me insane. And I tried a chip thing, so it had to do with chores. And the idea, I talked to a lot of parents around screen time and what were the successful strategies and what were the unsuccessful strategies, and really came down to it needs to work for us as a parent. So I talked to a parent who did like for every minute of reading, you get a minute of screen time. And I just had this vision of spreadsheets and flowchart. You know, I couldn't imagine keeping
track. For all four children.
Yes, I couldn't imagine keeping track of that. Just like to me, the chips are really elaborate, but they worked for you. So you looked at a problem and went, how, you know, what's going to be great for me? What worked for us at, you know, when my kids were young was just weekends, watch. Weekdays, no watch.
Then that's easy.
Yeah, exactly. So what I needed was easy, and what you needed was incentive for them to do other things. I love that.
Well, and we talked about this just before we went on the air, KJ. One of the things that I appreciate about the book is it isn't, you know, under the chapter of screen time, it isn't, I, KJ Dell'Antonia, will now tell you how you should manage your screen time.
I really wish I could.
Because as Lori points out, you know, everybody's different.
Yes.
So you do you. Find out what works for you.
Yeah.
And getting back to another mantra, people change. So as kids become teenagers, and almost all of them have phones because that's how they talk and stay in touch.
Our goals around screen time really
change. It changes. It isn't just watching a movie anymore.
Right. So as kids, when kids are little, I think it's absolutely so important that the parent be absolutely in charge of the screen time. Like, and there shouldn't be, your kids whining should not increase the amount of screens that they are seeing. You know, it shouldn't be about that. There should be rules that everyone understands, whether they're chips or weekend or weekday or just, it's just none at all. But when your kids get older, and when this happens just depends on the kids and the family, your goal changes because you don't want to raise kids who can follow your rules about screen time. You want to raise kids who understand that it's important to moderate screen time, which is a super different problem. Like, we don't, you know, I could keep my weekends and weekdays policy in place, and I can tell you exactly what would happen when my youngest went to college. It would all go straight out the window. He would never go to class, and, you know, it would be like Fortnite Festival. Exactly.
Very interesting.
So we are really, and let me tell you, we're struggling with this. It's not like this is a joyful area for us, but we're trying to work out, you know, teaching them and encouraging them to moderate their own access.
Let's go back to our listeners. Jamie's in Contoocook. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yeah. We raised three boys on my wife and I on a commercial farm, and there were two real important lessons that we felt we had an easy time teaching because we had the farm. And that was, number one, that the kids are the most important thing in our lives, but they aren't the only thing in our lives. And that was, you know, the animals just needed to be taken care of, and that's, and we'll try and get to as many games as you can, but we still need to get chores done and take care of the animals that rely on us. And the other thing that we were really able to teach that I think is very important for children is that they helped us run the farm, and their help really was important in making the business go. And you know, they complained about doing chores some as kids, but I think as they grew older and grew up, how important that was to them to realize the difference that they made, not just in their family, but in the business also.
Well, Jamie, it's so great to hear from you. And KJ, you can totally relate. You've got not maybe a working farm, but you've got some animals. In fact, you called us earlier today to say you might be late because you had a dead chicken on your hands.
Yeah, actually, we do have a working farm. It's not super relevant, important advice for most parents, but we actually do have a farm. We hay our fields. We have a barn with 19 horses that's managed by someone else, but it's a joint family thing, and my kids work there regularly and at some points worked there every single morning before school. So we have that. But what I talk to parents that, I mean, obviously not many of us have farms anymore. So what's important to take away from that is that most of us are happier if our kids are contributing to, you know, our running our house, our running our lives, our sort of, you know, creating this world together, that whether it's a farm or, you know, maybe you have a family business, but more likely it's just, you know, getting the trains in your house to run on time and getting the meals.
Emptying
and getting
the dishwasher.
Yes. So having kids that feel like they are an integral part of that, it's really key to parental happiness, and it's good for kids as well.
Jamie, thanks for the call. And you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So chores, that's another biggie in this book. And so you're sort of going there, KJ, but let's go there a little bit more. Why are chores so important? Beyond the obvious fact that if your kid is washing the dishes, it means you don't have to and you can work on the other things you have to do. It's deeper than that.
Well, and sadly, it probably doesn't mean you don't have to. It probably means you're standing there, reminding them to wash the dishes. You know, it takes forever to get them to do these things on their own. That's a different piece of it. So some of it, I mean, I really, you know, I want to come back to this idea of that it matters that we be, as parents and as adults, happier and feel good about our family lives and the way that we're raising our kids. And it does not feel good to get up and clear the table while your kids click back and grab their phones or wander off and get their Legos or whatever. That feels like slavery. That makes you feel angry and
it builds a
put
lot of
upon.
Resentment. You're sitting there playing some video game while I'm, you know, sweeping the kitchen floor again.
And I made the dinner and I earned the dinner and I cooked the, you know. And so that's painful. Plus, I mean, there is some small research out there that shows that kids that help do, you know, family chores, they're more successful as young adults. It also is sort of a protector for them against some of the feelings of depression and not being wanted that can plague teenagers. So there's some little bits of research here and there out there, but we don't need research on this. We know that the boyfriend who comes home and gets up after dinner and says, "May I help you clear the table?" is way better than the one that leans back and, you know, or grabs the kid that brought him there and says, "All right, we're heading out to the movie now." You know, you don't want to raise that kid. You don't want to raise the college roommate who thinks fairies come and do the dishes. You know, they don't even maybe have to get to the sink. And we've all had that roommate. So you know, there's some important stuff for our kids here as well, that they need this. They need to be a part of it.
Well, but getting to the title of your book, so, you know, maybe there's research showing that kids who do chores are, you know, more self-sufficient adults and so forth. But definitely, you don't need research to tell you this. If your kids are contributing to the household, you will be happier. And the title of the book is How to Be a Happier Parent, not How to Be a Happier Kid.
Now, so, an the kids irony will gripe. Is that you probably will just feel happier because you know it's the right thing to do. Because research does show that it will take approximately 5 years for your children to learn to clear their dish off of the table without being asked. And the fact that that research was done by me on a sample set of four in my kitchen should not make
wow,
you trust
scientific.
It any less. Yeah, exactly. No, it's going to take forever. Getting kids to do their chores, especially if it's not something that you've sort of really started at a super young age and had ingrained in the family, is hard. It's actually maybe in itself maybe not going to contribute to your immediate happiness. This is a long-term happiness project. A lot of the parents that I talked to who felt good about this, you know, who felt like they were on the right track or that their kids, you know, that they'd gotten there, they had adult kids and it had worked out, what they told me was to separate this into two wants. You want your kid to put the dish in the dishwasher. You want your kid to put the dish in the dishwasher willingly, happily, and with a pleasant understanding that they are contributing to the running of the household and without being asked. You have to throw that second one. Just throw it away. Just don't. You have to
focus on the goal.
Yeah, you have to let it go. The point is that your kid do the chore. And also, that other piece can, in itself, can really contribute to your unhappiness because it feels bad to have an 11-year-old going, oh, I can't clear the dishes because it's too hard. And you're just standing there going, I can't even believe I'm raising you and you won't even help me kitchen.
You're mad at them, but you also think, how am I such a terrible parent that I raised this 11-year-old who's having a drama fit over putting dishes in the dishwasher?
Right. We got to let that piece
so
go.
They're a bad person and you're a bad person. Yeah. It's all bad. And you're saying, let it go and just focus on the job at hand.
Yeah.
All right, lots more from our listeners after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
What's happening in the midterm elections before you vote in November is important. But what about what's going to happen in December or January? Hi, I'm Lauren Chulton, politics and policy reporter for NHPR. When you give each month as a sustainer, you help NHPR and NPR cover the entire election. What happened before, what's going on now, and especially what's coming next. Be a part of what comes next. Become an NHPR sustainer today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, KJ Dell'Antonia is here with her new book, How to Be a Happier Parent. And in it, she offers lots of research and her own experiences raising four kids to answer the question she says many parents have asked her over the years, why isn't this more fun? Join us with your comments, questions, your stories that we've been hearing from our listeners, 1-800-892-6477. Tell us what conundrums you have faced as a parent. Tell us when you have sort of looked around and said, this isn't very fun, and maybe how you got out of that. Again, you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And KJ, back to the phones, and Fletcher is calling in from Sanborn. Hi, Fletcher. Thanks for being with us.
Hi there. I wanted to comment on your guest's remarks about, you know, if you don't teach your kids to control their own screen time, then when they get to college, it all goes out the window and they will skip classes and stuff. I grew up in the 1950s and 60s, and my mom was pretty strict. There was no television on weekdays, please. You do your homework. And on weekends, we had limited time that we could watch a certain number of hours a day. Sure enough, when I got to college, it all went out the window. I skipped classes. I got the first D in a course that I ever did. And, you know, I there was a period of adjustment, and I figured it out. I started, you know, figuring how I had to manage my time, and I got good grades. But, yeah, that's a very valid point. But we also had, there was no question about it. Yeah, you take your own dish to the kitchen, please, and you wash it and stick it in the dishwasher. So we had turns. We had chores. I did the dishes. I did the floors. So we did have that healthy stuff. So I'm agreeing with a lot of what she has had to say. So,
what a story, Fletcher. I really appreciate that.
Oh, and Laura.
Yeah.
Let me please correct you for the second time. It is Sanbrinton, not Sanbornton.
Thank you for that. You know what? Even though I've been doing this show forever, there are so many towns and cities that I still just get it a little bit wrong. So I really appreciate that, Fletcher. Thank you so much. So there he is saying what you said.
Yes.
And yet, you know, I'm thinking as a parent, and I've got two boys, and there is some research showing that the video games especially are excellent at targeting that boy brain, the dopamine, the excitement. You know, these companies hire great psychologists to say, ooh, how can we get boys even more hooked onto these games?
This is a really tough moment.
So I'm worried, to be honest, if to just say to them, sure, go ahead, and I sure hope you self-regulate in college, because I think that they would just play these games until midnight.
They probably would. So just first of all, when I think about, you know, the story of him watching the TV all the time and getting his first bad grade, one of the things that I like to remind parents is that we'd really prefer that our kids made that mistake while they're under our roof, you know, on our watch.
Right.
So, you know, have them make it in high school, even though that's hard and that's, you know, oh, it's going to affect their future and everything like that. Have them make it while you're there to help them walk back and realize what went wrong. Not to rescue them, but to realize what ran. And went secondly, it is not like this is not free for all advice and, you know, let them learn to self-regulate without you doing anything at all. It's this constant ongoing conversation and balance. It's just when they were little, it was easier to have a black letter rule. And now it's much more, you know, how many hours? Who would, you know, would you, if I asked you to tell your teacher you'd been doing this for that many hours, would you feel, you know, how would you feel about that? What would your pediatrician think? You know, what do you think? How many hours do you think is reasonable on a Saturday? It's a constant thing. But something to remember, and I think to feel better about, is this is a national conversation, and our teenagers especially, they know it. They're talking about this at school. They're talking about this in their classes. They're talking about it with their counselors. They're talking about it in little groups. You know, they're seeing us talk about it. Teenagers know that we're all trying to figure out, you know, how much of this is good. Why is it good for us? Why is it bad for us? They're part of it. This is going to be their generation's problem to solve in some sense. So I think we can feel a little better that we're not really alone. And as much as they, you know, want to play Fortnite all the time, and that is certainly happening in our house, they can see the value in doing other things. You know, they're going to get it.
Well, I appreciate the hopeful message.
I hope they're going to get
it. And Fletcher, it's really nice to hear from you. Thank you for the call. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. KJ, some lovely emails from our listeners. Jackie emailed to share her aha moment. She says, I was on a hike with my three boys a couple years ago when my then 8-year-old turned around and looked at me and said, Mom, how come you don't have more fun? This hike is fun. You are always cooking or cleaning. The dishes aren't going anywhere. They are not important. Jackie says, I realized at that moment how true that was. That moment changed the way I looked at life. I realized how much more they wanted to spend time with me versus how little they cared about a clean house. Wow, Jackie, thank you for sharing that. What a story.
Yeah, that's just lovely. And, you know, to realize that they both want her to have fun with them and also probably to have her own fun. I mean, you don't want your kids to look at you as someone that really just, you know, works and does chores and then works some more and then does some more chores and then responds to some emails. Our kids, don't we want our kids to look at our grown-up lives and go, ooh, I want that? And instead, you know, we're making it look like a slog some of the time.
That's a really good point. If you don't look like you're having fun, your kids will think, ooh, I don't want to grow up. Ooh, I definitely don't want to have kids of my own.
Is
this
some
looks
interesting
like a drag.
Stuff. There's some interesting stuff happening that could lead us to the conclusion that our teenagers are not really, they don't, They're not trying to move towards adulthood as fast. They don't get their driver's licenses as early. They don't have girlfriends and boyfriends as early. They're not having sex as early, and they're not drinking as early. And those are great things, but they're also kind of indicative of this sort of, why would I want to grow up when right now somebody else is doing all the stuff, things, you know, things for me attitude.
And they don't look like they're having that much fun. So
yeah.
Why would I want to be one of them?
Right.
That's pretty profound.
It's a little scary, you know. I definitely, as a teenager, wanted nothing more than to get out of the house, than to, you know, sort of free myself and do my own thing. And my parents, that looked great because they were picking what we ate and they were picking where we went and they were, you know, they were calling all the shots. I don't think that necessarily in families today, the parents are calling all the shots.
So why not stay
why
in
not
the family
stick
where
around?
It's cozy and comfortable?
Yeah.
And mom always makes what you want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for that. And Carla emailed to say, when I was a young mother with three boys under the age of 7, I attended a work-related conference. I sat next to a woman older than me, and we struck up a conversation, and she asked me if I had children. That's all I needed to open the floodgates of how challenging it was with these three active little boys. She said to me, enjoy them while they are young. It doesn't last forever. Someday you will look back on these days with fond memories, missing every moment. It was simple, Carla says, and I think I'd even heard it before, but coming from this complete stranger, it really sunk in. Here's the kicker. KJ, Carla says, now I'm a grandmother, and her words ring true. This is the one piece of advice I always pass on when the opportunity arises. Carla, thank you so much. KJ, you kind of touch on this in the book, too. You say, look, this isn't going to last forever, so you might as well enjoy it.
Yeah, so that is a funny piece of advice, because when someone says that to you at the grocery store, and you got a 5-year-old leaning out of the cart, and a baby screaming, and the other one, and a 7-year-old, and an 8-year-old following you around begging for sugary cereal, you just want to run them over with their you just want to run over their toes, right? Because it's a real, you're like, yeah, okay.
How dare you say that to me?
Yeah.
Enjoy this.
So that can be kind of a painful comment. And yet, so the way that I like to put it is that the goal is that we find a way to enjoy our lives now, to be as happy about our lives now as we'll think we were when we're in that grandmotherly role. Like, you know, you're going to get there. So you don't have to say, enjoy it now. It's going to last. It's not going to last forever. You don't have to enjoy every moment. The goal is to be as happy in it as you'll sort of be in hindsight.
Well, I really appreciate that email, Carla. Thank you so much. And you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So we're not going to have time, KJ, to cover all the sort of areas that you touch on. We talked a lot about the mindset. We talked about a couple specifics, you know, chores and screen time and so forth. But I want to ask about special events, because this is where I've gotten tripped up. Special events where expectations get in the way. Birthdays, vacations, holidays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these expectations are built up. It's going to be so great. We're just going to bond and we're going to be so close. And how do sort of expectations around these big days get in the way of being happy with them?
Well, yeah, once you think, you know, once should enters the picture, fun often goes right out, because you're just like, oh, you know, we should do this, and in this place we should see this, and we should be feeling this, and we should be experiencing this, and it can get really difficult. So around vacations, you know, we build it up, and then we go, and everything goes wrong, and it's...
And you plan for it, and you take time off work.
Yes.
And you pay for it.
Yes, it's supposed to be your quality time, and it's really frustrating. So to take a step back and try to lower that should down to more of a we're going to go to this place and we're going to be together and whatever happens within it, you know, happens. That's one way to sort of approach the vacation piece of it. We're coming up on holidays, and that's another one that can get really stressful, because it's not just, it's Thanksgiving and we should really enjoy being with the family. It's also, and my children should behave themselves in front of my parents or in front of my aunt. And, you know, I should feel this way. And you get, you know, you're getting sucked back into your own childhood roles, and you've got your own kids. And man, that can really backfire in a happiness.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not necessarily the road to happiness. So again, I get looking at it in advance and going, okay, last year, what made me unhappy when, you know, we went to my family at Thanksgiving? What was hard? What could I do differently? You know, and I think realizing that sometimes our extended family members might not be doing all they could to contribute to our family's experience can be really helpful. Because once you're like, you know, I think if Aunt John, you know, I'm trying to use names that can't be even remotely associated with any member of my family, because if that family member weren't always asking me, you know, why my children don't give her hugs, or, you know, why my teenager isn't already applying to colleges, I might feel happier, but they're not going to change. So, like, how maybe I can just sort of accept that they're going to be that way and find
that's
a way
good
to
mantra for anyone, parent or not, to just say, all right, they're not going to change. How can I change my own internal compass around this?
Sometimes it's all we got. Most of the time it's all we got. You're not going to change other people.
Well, you say in the book, KJ, that you are happier since you started this quest, this research, this writing. What tends to pull you off your happier perch, and then what puts you back on?
Oh, well, definitely those moments of the screaming and unhappy kid. I mean, that's
the drama over the dishwasher.
Thing. The drama over the dishwasher, the drama over the high school. That's the tough stuff. But just looking up and reminding myself that this is where I want to be and what I wanted to be doing, even if it's not going so well, I'm just finding it really helpful.
All right. KJ, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's really great to talk to you. That's KJ Dell'Antonia. She's a longtime parenting author and blogger, and her new book is called How to Be a Happier Parent. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.